What's up, Packers fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Packer Report podcast brought to you by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. We are doing another draft special this evening, or actually you guys are going to catch this morning. Should be Wednesday morning in lovely Wisconsin or wherever you're taking this in. And filling in for Gilbert on the draft special is Mr. Jordan Reed from the Draft Network. Jordan, how are you?
I'm good, Ross. Thanks for having me on, man. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, it was fortunate you and I got to meet each other finally in Indianapolis. I've been a fan of your work for a long time. Really enjoyed following kind of your scouting process. And as I was telling, you know, Ben and Trevor and Kyle and all the guys at Draft Network, just so impressed what you guys have done as far as, you know, really understanding that this is a, or can be a 365 day a year interest, and that people really do care about the draft that much, and just how cool it is that, you know, you guys have built a successful business based on these 3 days in April. Can you talk a little bit about where you came from and just kind of this journey with TDN?
Yeah, so I have a really interesting journey, and mine is a little bit different just because I didn't go to school for journalism or anything like that. I went to a small school in North Carolina called North Carolina Central University. I'm sure everybody in the world has heard of Duke before. It's about 5 minutes away from there. So I went to school there in Durham, North Carolina. I actually was a quarterback there for 3 years, started 3 years from 2010 to 2013. I didn't have any pro aspirations or anything like that. I went right into coaching. After that, I started off as a graduate assistant at my alma mater for 2 years. And then I transitioned to being a position coach there. I coached quarterbacks there for a year and then running backs for 2 seasons after that. So I was college coach for 5 years up until 2017. Then after that, I went right into journalism, which is something that I've always wanted to do just because I needed a little bit more stability for my family. College coaching can be very hectic as far as moving around the country, and I just didn't want to do that. So I wanted to figure out a way to combine the two. I've always been a guy that's loved the NFL draft. When I was a kid, I used to sit in front of the TV back when it was 2 days and used to watch all 7 rounds. My parents used to tell me, like, man, just go outside and play. Get out from in front of that TV, just because I used to always just be intrigued with the process of the NFL draft and everything that went behind it. So that's where my love for it really came from. I actually was a recruiting coordinator for 3 years. When I was a position coach at North Carolina Central. And that's really where I fell deeply in love with scouting and just putting an entire puzzle together with different pieces. And I won 3 conference championships when I was there. So that really was where I started to see things from a different lens, you know, as a player, as a coach, and then now as an actual scout recruiting coordinator. So after that, I transitioned to sports journalism in 2018. As I said, started writing for some small blogs. And that's where I really started to create my Twitter account and just posting some things that I thought I saw. And, you know, here I am today. I ended up being with TDN. I started last June with them. I fell into a great situation with them. So kind of a bit of a different career path. I wasn't your typical sports journalism. I kind of was your player coach turned sports journalist, I should say. So a bit of a different path.
Yeah. So what do you feel like the difference is? Because that's something where I kind of have, in a similar way, I kind of have my feet in two camps where, you know, I run the North Dakota State site and the Green Bay Packers site. Well, a lot of what 24/7 Sports does is around recruiting. And I feel like there's a pretty major difference. And obviously, of course, there is, but a pretty major difference in scouting high school talent. Can they make it the college level? And scouting college talent, can they make it at the pro level? What have you found is the major difference in kind of ramping up what you're looking for as far as, is this guy good enough to play Division I football, to can this guy help an NFL team?
I think you're really recruiting more of the player when you're coming out of high school, I should say. And what I mean by that is you really have to focus on exactly what they can do on the field. And just because guys are so raw and they're always the best player on the field. That's what you notice about most of these high school films. And then, of course, they have to do what they have to do academically. But we both know that it's really all about the player on the field for the most part. But I think with college scouting, you're kind of scouting more of the player and also the background of that player as well, I should say, just because these guys, they're really going to be put on their own as a professional athlete. And that's something that they really haven't been I would say they haven't had at their disposal as a college athlete, just because they do make decisions on their own, but now they're going to be paid millions of dollars. So that really is an added factor and added incentive into this entire equation. So you really want to get guys that love the game. That's the first thing that I look for. And that's why I'm so big on background information, just because you can pull up YouTube and you can watch a guy, you can point out what he does with his helmet on. But I want to dive a little bit deeper, and I want to find out, guys, how they are with their helmet off. Just what made you fall in love with the game? And then why do you love the game so much? So that's just a little bit about my process and a little bit about the difference between high school recruiting and college recruiting.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I found the NFL Combine to be kind of a useful tool in that way, except at the same time, like, we don't have the meetings, you know, we don't have the full on access to, in my opinion, like, to the point of where the coaches do, the guys that are actually, you know, in the league, having 35 minutes, you maybe ask one or two questions at the podium. But I will say, even then, I feel like I'm a little bit closer to when I was just watching stuff on YouTube. I'm a little bit closer than, you know, having a little bit more access as far as getting to talk to these guys, even for 2-3 minutes at a time, even for 30 seconds at a time. Do you feel like the combine access and that stuff sort of helps with your evaluation, or is it just sort of a question and answer thing?
Oh, absolutely. It helps a ton, just because, like you mentioned, I think you're spot on. You don't get to meet with these. Speed dating is, in a sense, that these teams really get with these guys. So we don't get that 15 to 20 minutes to spend with them just to figure out who they are. We get a couple questions in at the podium, and then we really have to go off of that. But some of the questions that you do have from watching their film, you're able to get that asked or answered from them, I should say. So I found the podium sessions really helpful. And this was my first year at the Combine, and I really like that a lot, just because I'm a guy that makes an annual draft guide every year. So just having some of those questions and then figuring out these guys' background, it helped me a ton.
Yeah, I love the mid-round guys, too, that are at the tables, because if you wait long enough, you can have a 2-3 minute conversation one-on-one with most of the guys at the tables. And of course, if you haven't been in the NFL Combine, you have no idea what we're talking about. that's kind of narrow casting, but the guys that aren't at the top of the draft board are kind of sequestered off on these circular folding tables, as opposed to up on a podium. And I would say, to be kind, their interest is not the same. You know, not as many guys, certainly national guys, aren't going up to, you know, your Khalil Davises or your Derek Tuskas or, you know, your Haviland Guidry's from Utah. Like, you can kind of pick at those 4th, 5th, and 6th round guys and get some deeper answers to some questions that you, you know, may or may not have of those mid round guys. So I want to kind of take you back a little bit or get into the NFC North, because we're both, you know, that's kind of where our bones are. You explained to me pre-show that you grew up, you're a little bit younger than I am. So you grew up in the Randy Moss era. I would say I grew up in the Brett Favre era. Neither of us are from Minnesota or Wisconsin, but you're a Vikings guy. And so I want to kind of get your grasp on, if you want to touch briefly on what Detroit and Chicago did, I'd appreciate it, but kind of get deep into what's going on in Minnesota, because I've been critical of what they've done. I think I'm probably slanted to be that way, though, and would do that in most cases. I just feel like there's a dichotomy between the Cousins extension and almost all the other moves that they're making, whether it's releasing Klein, whether it's letting, you know, Linval walk, I understand letting Rhodes walk, trust me, I do, but not offering Mackenzie Alexander a competitive contract, not re-signing Everson Griffin, a number of things that really, to me, including the Diggs trade, scream rebuild, but the Cousins extension doesn't. So where do you kind of see the non-Packers teams in the NFC North?
So this is a really interesting question, just because I think they're all at different stages in what they want to do. And I'll just start off in Minnesota, and I'm just give you an honest answer. Nobody knows exactly what they're doing, honestly, just because You know, the Klein cut came out of nowhere, and he probably was their best interior offensive lineman last year. And we know Minnesota is a team that's really been trying to rebuild their offensive line for going on 4 to 5 years now. And then cutting a quality offensive lineman like that was really a surprise. But maybe they have some guys in-house that they like more. I'm not sure. Drew Samia is a guy that they took in the fourth round last year that had a lot of fans in the draft. Maybe they feel as if he can be that guy after redshirting him last year. I don't really know. Xavier Rhodes, I think that was going to be an obvious cut just because he hasn't been the same guy since that extension he signed. The Kirk Cousins deal was something that was a bit confusing just because it kind of threw a wrench in the direction of the team. I would say if they were going to go with a rebuild, I don't see why they would extend him, but maybe they just needed to lower the cap number overall just to give themselves some more wiggle room. So they gave Kirk that extension, but I mean, I have no idea what's going on there, but the way it's looking right now, they're going to have a lot of young guys starting on that team. So maybe they're just kind of punting on this year and essentially, and maybe saying they're going to be a contender again the year after next. So that's basically my opinion on it in a snapshot, I would say, but I don't really know. We'll see what does happen with this draft. They have 12 draft picks, and Rick Spielman is a guy that wants to have at least 10, and he already has that. They have 2 first-round picks at the 22nd overall pick and also the 25th overall pick. So we'll see what does happen with that. The Detroit Lions, a team that I think is probably going to have a new coaching staff after this year just because I don't really see the direction that they're going in there. I think Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia really are entering a lame duck year in a sense, just because I just don't see how they can compete in the division. I think Chicago is better than them, even with Trubisky under center. And I think Minnesota and Green Bay are still far ahead of them, even though they've suffered a bit of a setback in Minnesota. I think Green Bay definitely still has a strong roster overall. So I think Detroit still is the worst team in this division overall. I know Matt Stafford wasn't healthy last year, but I just don't see how they can compete in the division with these other teams. And then Chicago, I think they're the ultimate wild card, and all comes down to the quarterback position. We know they're very strong on defense. They're always going to be good in that area, but the offense took a massive step back last year. Trubisky just hasn't been what they thought he would be after taking him with the 2nd overall pick in 2017. They brought in Nick Foles, but I just think that kind of was I don't know the word for it. It doesn't really do much for me, honestly, just because I think him and Trubisky really are the same person in a sense, even though I think Foles' peaks are going to be a bit better, but I don't think he can take them over the top or anything like that. So I think Green Bay and Minnesota still are the clear 2 best teams in this division. We'll see what does happen after the draft for Minnesota, but Chicago is definitely a team that can be a wild card just because of what happens at the quarterback spot. So the NFC North is always strong, and I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like there's a ton of guys that are going to start and play like 600, 700, 800 snaps that are not on the Vikings yet. I think there are significant roster holes that whether they trade Anthony Harris and free up $11 million and plug a starter here or there, or they literally just plug in first, second, third round picks as starters. And that very well may happen. You know, you take a Jeff Gladney and a Justin Jefferson, 22, 25, well, you got a starting corner and you got a starting wide receiver right there, you know, and then that kind of can I think be said about the second round as well. I can't agree with you more about Chicago. I think their offensive line really regressed last year, and part of that was on Trubisky. I know that sounds dumb, but his decision making, him holding the football, him putting them kind of in bad positions. I feel like everybody took a step back. Losing Kyle Long to retirement is not great. Losing their swing tackle, Cornelius Lucas, is not great. I like Allen Robinson. I think Anthony Miller really has a chance to make a step forward. I think the defense will, you know, potentially continue to take steps back, small steps, but steps back. I know a lot of people are excited about Robert Quinn instead of Leonard Floyd, and that's all fine, but, you know, they still lost Nick Kwiatkowski, and they still did not re-sign Prince Amukamara, and we don't really know who's replacing HaHa Clinton Dix, and even though Clinton Dix wasn't great, you still don't know who the replacement is. So their defense keeps taking these very small steps back, like trading Adrian Amos for – not trading, but, you know, having Adrian Amos, okay, now he's HaHa Clinton Dix. Having Bryce Callahan, okay, now he's Buster Screen. And these incremental little dips, unfortunately, can't be fixed in the draft because of the Khalil Mack trade. And that's the really difficult place that unfortunately for them, Ryan Pace, it kind of put them in that spot. But enough about the NFC North. Let's get to the NFL draft. That's why you are here. And I think the number one, you know, position that everybody talks about, the one that everybody's been excited, and our two teams, if you want to say that, Minnesota and Green Bay. Green Bay, really based on what happened on film last season, and then Minnesota, of course, with the Diggs trade, are all over this spot. And that's this group of wide receivers. And I think for me, it's the best group since that 2014 group with Devontae Adams, with Allen Robinson. I believe Odell was in that group. Just some really phenomenal guys. To me, I like this group as good as I like any group going back to 2014. Do you feel like the receiver crop is the strongest position in this draft?
Yeah, I do. I think it's receiver. I think offensive tackle is another, and I think cornerback and running back. I think those are probably the top four for the most part. But just comparing that 2014 group to some of the guys in this year's crop, I think the star power in 2014 was a little bit better just because Mike Evans and Odell Beckham Jr. was at the top. I don't think any of these guys have that type of ceiling. I think CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy probably could arguably have that type of ceiling, but outside of that, I just don't see any receivers having an immediate production like those guys have and being consistent like they have been over their careers. But as far as the depth and comparing the two, I think this crop has more depth overall. And I think that group had 15 receivers taken in the first three rounds, and I think this group definitely could challenge that.
I think so too, man. I tell you what, I've been on this this crop, and I get to guide 24, and I'm still thinking, yeah, you know, he can work in the slot, and you could kind of do some stuff with him. Or guy 23 is, yep, he would be a great third option as a deep threat. If you have two good guys, he'd be a great number three. And when you can start projecting these guys as actual difference makers, their second, maybe third year in the league, as legitimate starters, or at least in your best four in your rotation, that's impressive to me. I mean, that's incredible to me. Usually you get 22, 23 guys deep in a position, and you're talking about guys that you are hoping to help out on special teams, or you catch, you know, lightning in a bottle and you get that magic fifth or sixth round pick that ends up contributing. But this is a really impressive class. If you don't mind, and I'll kind of go through mine as well. I don't know if you've got your ratings or ranking, excuse me, ahead of you, but I'll kind of buy you a little time here. What's your top, let's say eight, look like? Because I think everybody has the top three, or not everybody, I shouldn't say everybody. Our buddy Eric Crocker put out his rankings today, and his top three don't look like everybody else's, but the top three are pretty darn uniform with everybody. What does your eight look like?
Yeah, and I think the top three are pretty much consensus among everybody, and that's Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and then also CeeDee Lamb in any order. It just depends on the flavor that you like, and everybody has compared this group really to kind of like ice cream. It just depends on what flavor that you like between these guys, whatever type of scoop that you like.
What does your favorite team need? That's another one that I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's definitely dependent upon that, just because these guys have different types of variations as far as the types that they are. I think Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb are guys that are more efficient in the short to intermediate areas, while Henry Ruggs, he's labeled as a guy that's mainly a deep threat, but I think that's kind of a misconception with him, just because I think he can work all three areas of the field in successful areas. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Henry Ruggs, but my wide receiver one is Jerry Jeudy, just because separation is king in the NFL to me, even though he might not be as great as CeeDee Lamb at the catch point. I'm very, very cognizant of what happens prior to that. And that's not to say CeeDee is a bad route runner or anything like that. I think he's terrific. And I think it's kind of a game of any, meeny, miny, mo between either one of those guys who you have at wide receiver one or wide receiver two. But I just trust Jerry Jeudy to get open a little bit more than I trust CeeDee Lamb, even though Lamb is a little bit better at the catch point. But my top five, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and Ruggs, those are my top three. Justin Jefferson is my fourth guy. Denzel Mims is my fifth guy, who has had a meteoric rise throughout this process. Then I have Brandon Ayuk and Jalen Reagor. That rounds out my top seven. So I'm a big fan of this wide receiver group. And that eighth spot kind of is a toss-up to me. It just depends on who you like. It can be LaVisca Chenault. It could be T. Higgins. It could be Jalen Reagor. It could be Michael Pittman Jr. Yeah, I mean, like I said, man, it's a game of any, meeny, mighty, mo with these guys. It's just a matter of exactly what you need on your team.
Yeah, ours are pretty much right in there. I've got Higgins still there. I wish I would have had some athleticism concerns answered. I think we ended up with some questions that weren't completely answered at the combine as far as what he might run, separation issues, but I would say Mims has similar ones. And so he's really my wild card, and I can't figure out what to think of him. The guy I end up being higher on than everyone is LaVisca Chenault. He is wide receiver 4 for me. Our top 3 are the same. Justin Jefferson ticks in at number 5 for me. But LaVisca, as far as I'm concerned, if you go back and watch his 2018 film and everything he was able to do his true sophomore season as probably a 19, 20-year-old kid, he was phenomenal. I thought he was one of the best 5, 8, 10 players in all of college football as a true sophomore. And then has the injuries, doesn't have the 2019 season that you might have wanted. My thing was, I said, if he had the same year or even developed a little bit in 19, he would have been wide receiver 1 or 2 for me. So then you take injuries into account, you take that little drop into account, and it's like, all right, how far do I drop this kid? I felt the same way about the pass rusher a couple years ago, Harold Landry, who the year before he came out for the draft, he was just phenomenal. I mean, looked outstanding. And then the year that he did come out in the draft, he had some like an ankle that slowed him down and didn't play every single game. And I think it cost him first-round pick status. And he's been good for Tennessee, but I think it cost him first-round pick status that 2018 tape not being as good as his 2017 tape. So, yeah, LaVisca is a guy that, man, I'm just in love with. You mentioned the offensive tackle class. Can you give me kind of your shelves or your tiers? I think everybody feels pretty similar as they do with the receivers about those top 4 guys. Being a Vikings guy, do you just anticipate that the 4 tackles everybody's talking about won't be there when Minnesota picks?
See, this is going to be really interesting to me just because of how strong this offensive tackle class is. I think there's a guy that could sneak in there that's not maybe in that first tier. And like we've seen Daniel Jeremiah come out and say, Isaiah Wilson is a guy that could sneak into the first round, which I think would be completely, completely misguided if a team does take him that early. Just because,
like a guard and kind of like, yeah, a not that athletic guard.
Yeah, he reminds you a lot of Jermaine Ifedi coming out. I think that's a perfect comp for him, and not saying he's going to have that type of career path. But he reminds you a lot of him just because I forgot who he signed with. He signed a 1-year deal with somebody, but they're going to actually play him at guard this year. So I was reading that a couple of days ago, but I think that's something that could happen with Isaiah Wilson. But just hearing names like that, and even a guy like Ezra Cleveland, somebody that I think definitely could be in first-round contention, and it wouldn't surprise me if he goes in the top 25 just because we've seen in past years these athletic offensive linemen, the NFL just has some type of fetish for them. We saw it with Colton Miller. We saw it with Andre Dillard, and we saw it with Titus Howard. We've seen it consecutively each year, and Ezra Cleveland is a guy that definitely falls into that category, and we'll see some other ones here as well. Austin Jackson is another guy that definitely falls into that category. So I think there could be a surprise guy in that second or even third tier that ends up being a first round pick, even though we've all been talking about the top 4 and Wills, Wirfs, Becton, and Thomas. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody in that second or third tier ends up going in the first round.
For sure. My guy after that shelf of the 4 guys you mentioned is Josh Jones. I really like his game. As far as my evaluations, my tiers, if you will, I've got those 4 guys kind of in a class by themselves. I like Wirfs the best, but you can talk me into a whole bunch of configurations. What does your team need? What does your team run? Are they outside zone? Are they inside zone? Do they run, are they pass protecting 70% of the time? Are they, are you pinning and pulling? All those questions about what you need in an offensive lineman. I think that that can separate those guys. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I think that there is, in my opinion, a shelf from the four guys and then Josh Jones. And then I do consider there to be another shelf between, I don't care, Lucas Niang, Austin Jackson, Prince Tega, Isaiah Wilson, Ezra Cleveland, Matt Pert. I don't care what guy you're talking about. I think that there is definitely there's a shelf there, and there's a, whether it's a limited ceiling or with a guy like Cleveland, where you don't expect his ceiling to come until maybe 2022, because Ezra Cleveland has some functional strength issues that are very real. And frankly, might and should give Packers fans some Jason Spriggs PTSD, because that's the kind of finesse super athlete tackle that Green Bay traded a bunch of stuff to move up in the second round and take. And, you know, after his rookie contract, his career is likely over. Who are a couple of mid-round guys or even guys? And I know you, I don't know if you've been doing mostly just first round mocks, but maybe you've done some third, fourth, whatever round mocks, whether it's between you and your colleagues at TDN, or maybe you're running the TDM mock simulator for the Vikings or another team, and you go, golly, I end up taking this guy. He's always on the board when I pick. You know, he's always available. I like him better. Who are a couple of mid-round guys, and I don't care what position, that you're going to die on that hill? You're going to wave that flag.
Well, I'll just start off at offensive tackle. I think Matthew Pert from UConn, he's one guy that I definitely have taken a liking to for the most part. I love former basketball players at offensive tackle just because it shows off that athleticism that you're looking for at the position. And I think the hardest thing to teach offensive tackles naturally is pass protection. And guys that already have that coming through the door, I think that helps them a lot. And that's something that Matthew Pert already has walking through the door. He's already going to be a ready-made pass protector from day one. Now, he needs to show some tenacity in the run game and gain some power and some strength in his lower half. And I think that's something that would improve over time just because that comes with maturity. So he's one guy that I definitely do like. Brian Edwards, the wide receiver from South Carolina, has gotten a lot of love on draft Twitter, and rightfully so, just because we didn't get to see him throughout the process. He's been nursing a foot injury, which happened when he was training for the combine. And we didn't get to see him at the Senior Bowl, unfortunately. I think the rise that we're seeing Denzel Mims have right now, I think if Edwards was healthy, he would be having a similar rise right now. And it's just unfortunate we weren't able to get some numbers on him.
For sure. I get – so for Pert, my guy is Jack Driscoll.
Mm-hmm.
I think we get too locked into who played right and who played left because, you know, obviously he played with Prince. If you can play tackle, like, we'll figure it out. And, you know, if you can get me a great right tackle, and obviously Green Bay situation, the left tackle is not a problem. But if you can get me a great right tackle, then we'll help out the left tackle. I just want a guy that can play. And I really think you're going to get Jack Driscoll in the third or fourth round and legitimately get a guy that can play. And that just has so much value on the edge, in my opinion. And I like that Brian Edwards deal. We had to submit final rankings for wide receivers so early for the Cheesehead TV draft guide. I look at my top 25 and I go, God, I can move this guy here and this guy here. And God, I should put this guy there. And it's just infuriating. But Brian Edwards is another guy where every game I watch, it's like, man, his quarterbacks stunk out loud. and you just watch him work and it's like, golly, not, like so little of this is his fault. You know, if he played, even like I help out with, because North Dakota State's old coach is in Kansas. I help out with Kansas State. If they had a guy like Skylar Thompson, who I think will be a late round option next year in the NFL draft, if they had a guy of Skylar's talent level in South Carolina, how much different Brian Edwards' career might have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some of the same stuff with Debo Samuel, obviously, but this year I think it was even exacerbated, and boy, that it was a struggle. Well, we're closing in on the half hour mark here, Jordan, and I don't want to keep you forever and ever. So let's get to some of some of the fan questions. I dropped that a little bit earlier in the day, and we got a couple of people to respond with some ones that I think we can riff on for a little bit. And I want to start with one that I think is really interesting. Obviously, no love lost between the fan bases of the Packers and the Vikings. And I think it's Bill Simmons' theory. And Bill has a lot of theories and stuff that he kind of goes on his podcast about. But Bill Simmons has a theory where you should GM in a way that you do what your biggest rival doesn't want you to do, because that's probably the best thing. So you're a Vikings fan. Mm-hmm. Who do you not want the Packers to end up with? I think it's an interesting question.
Oh, without question, it's Jalen Reagor. Man, okay. just imagine him in that offense. And I think the biggest thing with Reagor is that he reminds me a lot of Curtis Samuel coming out of Ohio State a few years ago. And that the thing you notice about on Rager's film is that he's constantly getting open, but the quarterback play was so bad to where his production really suffered. And just imagine pairing him with Aaron Rodgers. A lot of those concerns that he had at TCU as far as him not being able to get the ball accurately to him, that obviously would be put at ease just because of now he's playing with one of the best, or who I classify as the most talented quarterback of all time with Aaron Rodgers. So it without question would be Jalen Reagor.
His three-cone stuff, that agility stuff, the testing doesn't bug you?
No, it doesn't, just because I think he plays much faster on film. I'm just going to trust the tape with that. And there are some rumors that he was nursing a little bit of an injury. So I'm not sure exactly if that's true or not, but I think he plays extremely explosive on film.
Yeah, the two guys that I really cape for, the question wasn't asked of me, but I'll answer it anyway. The two guys I don't want to see in Minnesota at the wide receiver position are just the loves of my life, Denzel Mims and Justin Jefferson, specifically Jefferson. I think – I don't know if he'd be plug and play for Stephon Diggs, and I don't know, honestly, if you were to get one of those two guys, what would you think? Would you think Jefferson in the slot and Thielen outside, or Thielen in the slot and Mims outside? What would tickle your fancy?
I think they would put Thielen on the outside just because I think he wins more consistently out there, and he's already proven that he can do that. And that's not to say Jefferson can't do it, but I just think he's much more comfortable in the slot, and he looked much more at home doing that last season. So I think Jefferson would be in the slot, and they would transition to Thielen. They would transition Thielen to that extra receiver spot on the perimeter.
So you would rather acquire Jefferson than the Mims, who's more considered to be the outside guy?
I honestly would be fine with either one. Minnesota, yeah, just they don't need to worry about positioning right now, and they just need to stockpile talents because the receiver room is so bad right now.
Yeah, no, it is, and yeah, and then the other fear, if you want to call it a fear, would be that one of the top four tackles falls to 22, and that would be the other thing that if I'm a Packers fan, I want Za'Darius Smith to live in Kirk Cousins' lap for another season, and not let them beef up that offensive line and kind of get things going in the right direction there. I think that the other one that would just be terrifying is if somehow CJ Henderson fell. That would be pretty scary too. I'm really high on him. Specifically, if you're going to play a lot of man, I think he's pretty terrifying. Okuda is better, but I'm as high on CJ as I think most guys that you will find. Any CJ Henderson takes?
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there about him. And at the combine, he was one guy that I wanted to know a lot on. And I asked some of my scouting buddies in the industry about him just to get a gauge on him, just because, you know, we only have draft Twitter to go by for the most part. And for whatever reason, people absolutely hate him just because of his tackling. And I think one of my scouting buddies made a good point, and he talked about James Bradberry, and he talked about Byron Jones. And he asked me, how many times has their tackling been brought up when it's talking about them getting the next contract? And he said, zero for the most part. So don't really worry about the tackling part, just because that's something that can be taught to him. It's just a matter of him not knowing how to do it. He has interest in doing it. It's just a matter of him not knowing how to do it. So he just said, I want to know how well he covers. And he thinks outside of Okuda, he thinks he's the best cover man as far as man-to-man corner in this draft. And I think he's exactly right with that. So that's why I think Henderson, I have a hard time seeing him getting past the Cowboys at 17. I think that's pretty much his floor for the most part as far as where he could go. So I'm a big fan of Henderson personally. He's my number two corner behind Okuda. And I'm just going to trust that he can learn how to tackle, even though tackling isn't a huge thing for me at corner. I just want to know how well he covers. And that's exactly what he does.
I'm with you 100%. I was just having this discussion about Grant Delpit too. If you're a free safety, I don't care. If you're an outside corner, I don't care. If you're a strong or a box safety, I care a little. And if you're a nickel, I care a little about tackling. But those outside three, I just don't care. I'm pretty much going to grade your coverage ability. And if you can tackle, that's a plus. Otherwise, your job for me is to keep the ball out of the receiver's hands. And that's the long and short of it. Quick question from Chris. Tell me about Kayvon Wallace. And I have not gotten to Kayvon's film, so I'm gonna kind of defer to you on this one. Tell me about Kayvon Wallace. I've been watching his tape, and I think it's stupendous.
Very underrated player. And the thing about Kayvon is that he has a really interesting story. He actually was a receiver coming out of high school. And he made a transition his final year, senior year of high school. They ended up winning the state championship. And that summer circuit, he actually switched to defensive back. He switched to cornerback. So that's really where his story got started. He was originally supposed to go to Cincinnati, but Clemson came in at the last second and ended up swooping him and, you know, changing him and getting him to sign the dotted line, of course, to come to Clemson. A player that was a contributor right away. And I think the best thing about Kayvon is that he kind of gets overshadowed just because of some of the bigger names on Clemson's roster. But what you notice is that he's another guy that's all over the field and flying all over the field. And I think he really dominates in the short to intermediate areas. He's not a guy you really want playing deep in the deep halves or anything like that, just because the closer he is to the ball, the better. And they used him a lot on these design run blitzes. And also, I think he's fine with guarding these slot receivers and tight ends in the slot. But something that you notice about Kayvon is that he's always showing up around the ball. And just go back and watch them in a national championship game. He was terrific. He was outstanding against Ohio State in the semifinal as well. So I'm a big fan of Kayvon Wallace, but I think his value is something that's getting a little bit underestimated just because he was a special teams captain at Clemson as well. And that's something that you love to see, especially from safeties. And just thinking about Green Bay's situation, they already have two top guys in Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage, of course, but Darnell Savage being that third safety and then him being a contributor on special teams, I think he could help and get on the field right away.
Yeah, and, you know, Darnell can play dime. Darnell can play nickel. Adrian Amos can play. The Packers play sub in a safety at the second linebacker spot constantly. Amos played that spot a little bit at when Raven Green got hurt. This idea, and I've been talking about Ashton Davis, I've been talking about Delpit, I've been talking about a number of guys who are just phenomenal, rangy, cover one free guys that can move sideline to sideline. I have no problem dropping Amos or Savage either into the slot or into the box and letting a really good safety roam back there if that's the value that presents itself. And that's a big deal with the draft, obviously, is the values presenting themselves. Quick question. I'll take these two, and then I've got one last one for you, and then we'll wrap it up. Which receiver is the best fit for Green Bay that could realistically be there at 30? The short answer, I think, is Jefferson, though that seems to be getting less and less likely. I'll just file that one on under a you'll never know. The guy that I think is maybe a 60, 70, 80% chance of being there that I love as a fit is Brandon Ayuk. I just – the way that he gets deep and the way that he handles breaking tackles, forcing missed tackles with the ball in his hand, it's just something they don't have. And that's what I'm all about is diversifying wide receiver rooms. I don't want four guys that do the same thing. I want guys that do different things well, that stretch different parts of the field. Yeah, it would be great to have four Davante Adams that do kind of everything well, but that's just not a life that we live. And frankly, it's not a sustainable one financially either because you got to pay these guys. It's great to have guys with different skill sets in the wide receiver room, guys that stress the defense in different ways. And right now, I think a lot of the Packers – receivers do a lot of the same things, big, fast guys that don't run great routes, whether you're talking about Equanimeous St. Brown, you're talking about Marquez Valdez, Scantling, even Alan Lazard, who's not as fast as those guys, but is really a jump ball guy. It would be nice to see someone with a little juice, a little wiggle in that room. The next one would be, as an Oregon and a Packer fan, which player is the most likely I'll see in green and gold again? That's from Robin. Robin, I think I love the fit with Troy Dye. I did a profile on Troy Dye. I think Troy Dye would be a fantastic understudy for Christian Kirksey. Christian is not particularly durable, or at least has not been in the last couple of years, so they might need depth there anyway. I love the Troy Dye Green Bay fit. The Packers, historically, because of how much they respect Sam Seal, the West Coast scout, go into the Pac-12 a lot. And I think you could certainly see a Duck in 2020 move their way somewhat east to Green Bay. You take this last one. Is Ezra Cleveland a bad choice at number 30, Jordan?
No, I don't think so. And I think the thing with Ezra is that if you do start him early on, it's going to be what I like to call a trial and error period. And there's going to be some highs, there's going to be some lows, but you just have to stick it out with him and just deal with it. But I think as he really learns on the fly, essentially, I think he's going to be a long-term starter. And I hate to make these comparisons, but Brian O'Neill was a very similar guy. And I know he went in the second round, so the draft capital wasn't as severe or as early. But I think they could really have a similar career path. O'Neill really wasn't seen as a guy that could start right away. But if he did, there was going to be some severe up and downs. And I think that could be a similar situation with Cleveland. I think why Packers fans have so much pause about Cleveland is because of the Jason Spriggs situation, the athletic offensive tackle that's really supposed to be a do-it-all type of guy that just didn't turn out to be what they thought he would. And I think Ezra Cleveland is a much better prospect overall than what Spriggs was. Spriggs was more than just a typical athlete. He really didn't have a lot of polish coming into the league. And I think Cleveland has enough polish to be a starter. It's just a matter of him gaining strength. I think that's the biggest area of weakness that he needs to address.
Yeah, I mean, I think your hope is Brian O'Neill and your fear is Colton Miller and Jason Spriggs. And I completely understand that. Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate your time, man.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, we want to thank our sponsors, Stadium View, Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. We want to thank Jordan for coming on. And I want to thank all you guys for listening. We'll have another show with Gilbert later on in the week. Stay safe, stay at home, everybody, and go Pack, go.